Good afternoon. We are going to call the Tuesday June 8th iteration of the Lake Michigan Safety Subcommittee to order. Senator Timms, would you like to continue?
You say you want me to leave?
No, would you like to continue?
Continue what?
Singing. Sound pretty good.
I'll stay awake, Mr. Chair.
And we will call the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1131 to order as well. May we have a staff report, please?
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 1131, A and Gross, comes to you from the Senate, will come through the Senate and have passed through there. And what this bill does is it appropriates money from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for purposes of providing financial support for construction of the Oregon Korean War Memorial, which declares an emergency effective July 1st of 1999. And there's a minimal fiscal impact from this bill. It would appropriate $287 from the general fund to represent the 287 Oregonians, both service men and women who were killed in action during the Korean War.
We could make some sort of humorous remarks regarding $287 comparative to the size of the budgets that we normally hear in this committee. But I think the committee should know, if you don't already, that those dollars represent $1 each for each American serviceman that was, or Oregonian serviceman that was killed in the war. And I think this is a very significant budget, not only in its intent, but its symbolism. And so I'm very proud that this budget is before our committee. Any discussion?
Sure.
Senator Timms.
So am I. I agree with you, and I'm very disappointed that Senator Lynn is not here, but I'm for the bill. I know he is big,
and I'm just amazed that he's not here, and he knew about the hearing today. I know that I talked to him about it earlier, but...
We could reset this and call him if he wants to come testify.
Okay.
Senator Gordon.
I would suggest that. I served on the committee with Senator Lim that passed out this bill and recall his very passionate floor speech on the subject. I think we should give him that courtesy.
I would agree with that. So we will recess Senate Bill 1131. And Linda, could you call Senator Lim's office and just find him? Tell him to get down here. We'll stop what we're doing at the time. And have a good senator be able to testify on his, what I think, a marvelous bill, one of the better intended bills I've seen this session, not only in terms of what it does, but also what it can. So, and then we will open the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2220 relating to financial administration of the Department of Corporation.
Chair Westland, committee members, this bill also comes to the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. It was passed out with a due pass recommendation, two ways and means. This is a non-fiscal housekeeping bill that sets up a specific account to the Department of Corrections, allows it to collect fees, assessments, donations, gifts that are continuously appropriated to it. Also, the proceeds from the issuance of certificates of participation. There has been, continues to be, a general account set up for this purpose. This just provides a specific account for the Department of Corrections to have as an agency. It had used the other account primarily up to this point, also when it was a part of DHR. Although it was set up as a separate agency, they did not set up this account for it, and it is a housekeeping measure to do so.
Okay. Any discussion on House Bill 2220?
Yes.
Chair would accept the motion.
Chairman, I'd like to ask a question of staff. By setting up this account, are the money notice on line 8 and 9, all monies in the account are continuously appropriated. But even though they're appropriated, is the expenditure limitation within the budget? For questions?
Chair Weffern and Senator Tim, yes, that's correct. The limitation for those expenditures is just handled through the budget. All other funds accounts are in, other funds revenue sources are in continuously appropriated to those accounts, and then the budget limits those expenditures.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if it's ready, I'd move House Bill 2320 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a repass recommendation.
Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2220 is moved to the full committee with a repass recommendation. It's the House Bill. Do we have any Full Ways and Means carriers? Representative Patrick, who are passionate about this bill. You can see it in his eyes. And on the Senate floor, Senator Hanner, and Representative Patridge, why don't you carry it on the House floor as well.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, I would state for the record that I'm willing to support this on the floor because you have to be convicted to forfeit your assets. Under the RICO law, if this dysfunctional legislature passed, you don't have to be convicted of anything to lose your assets. And since I subscribe to the Constitution, I'll be more than happy to carry your bill.
I'll not be the same one. I don't think that's good.
I don't believe that this is my bill. I believe it's Department of Corrections.
Oh, it's the Unified Association. Oh, I'm talking about the next one.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're
warming up. He always was ahead of his time.
Just warming up.
Yeah. I'll be running cameras for questions, sure.
Okay. Yeah, now we're getting to that.
Since we're going to build it in damage.
Yes, and I have gotten the state cartographers to move damage.
I thought maybe they were moving wolf and don't leave any damage there. I wanted to ask a good representative.
No,
you were in the that forfeiture. You have to be convicted, right?
We will review that when we open up. I'll give you a summary. Josh, we have no criminal asset forfeiture in the state.
Okay. I didn't make you on this. You don't have to be found guilty of anything.
Not RICO. It's just in RAM.
You want to bet? We had a pinball machine operator in Medford.
Yeah. Well, that's a different issue.
Never convict sale anything. He had $500,000 worth of pinball equipment. And then the state said, we'll make you part of the action if you clinch a robbery. And then they aced him out of that. But they took all the equipment.
On those profound remarks, we will close the work session on House Bill 2220.
Thanks for leaving here today, and I'm going to heat up on it.
And we will reconvene the work session on Senate Bill 1131 relating to the Oregon-Korean War Memorial. And I notice we happen to have a distinguished visitor in the audience who has walked a great distance to be here, and we are honored by his presence. Senator Lynn, would you like to come forward and
I will appreciate it.
Talk about your bill?
Chair Weston and members of the committee, it is my great honor to be at your committee. And for the record, my name is John Lim. I'm state senator from District 11. And I was in Korea when there has been a Korean War between 1950 and 1951, and we lost more than 50,000 that American young soldiers killed during the Korean War, more than 100,000 people, the young person wounded. And still more than 8,000 people are missing still unaccounted for. And unfortunately, and my father was also the casualty during the Korean War. So more than 1 million people during this three-year conflict has been killed, either north and south, including the many other allies, of UN allies. And I'm at the trip that the recipient of the benefit by the American country, because we were saved by the American people when South Korea was invaded by the North Korean June 25, 1950, early morning on Sunday, because they thought that was the best time for them to invade the South Korea. But that the South Korea was one of the bottom in during the Korean War in terms of the economy. Now they are becoming the 10 largest economies in the world. From the bottom, they come up to the top. The reason they came to top is because of their closely working with the United States. And we are the direct success story of the American support since the Korean War. I'm especially the beneficiary of this great country, and I'm very proud of being an American citizen like you are. So now we can talk as the same citizen. Anyway, because of that background, we tried to erect a memorial in our state, and the land was donated to Wilsonville from the city of Wilsonville. And Korean society in Portland area, we raised already $130,000 plus. And the next week, I'm sending a shout out to Korea, hopefully to get about $200,000 from the Hyundai Semiconductor Headquarters in my hometown, Georgia area. Also, as you may know, also I'm carrying the letter of invitation, which we all passed out from both the Senate and House. I'm going to present it to the President of Korea directly when I meet him. Next week, hopefully, it's under arrangement. Because all of those reasons, that I think it's appropriate, we gave about $287, which is a symbolic amount, that the 287 young soldiers killed during the Korean War from our state. And we have done that before during the World War II, that many women also killed during the World War. We gave them some $1,000 or $2,000, $1 each woman killed during the World War II. I got the same idea. Why not we gave symbolically just $1 each? Even though each person might, we should give millions of dollars for each person for their sacrifice, but since that our tax dollars we should use prudently, and I appreciate the co-chair Jim Sims that bringing this matter at this committee to hear this important bill. Even I can pay for $200 some dollars, but that's not an issue. It is a strong state support, that the symbolic support I think is more important. We hope to dedicate this memorial sometime later part of this year. Hopefully we try to coincide with the president visit to our state, if that happens at the same time. And when president comes to our state, that he will bring a lot of business people, and we can put the Oregon map into the Asian country. And we are doing a lot of business with Korea. As you know, Korea is number one trading partner in our state at this time, exceeding Japan and Canada. We hope to continue that way. These things didn't happen by chance. You and me, plus many business people together, we created that atmosphere. And the Hyundai company invested in Eugene area $1.2 billion, creating more than 800 jobs. They just finished phase one, hopefully moving into the phase two, hopefully employing more than $800 people in the future. But at this time, it is not sure. Maybe my story may be too long, but I appreciate your support of this $287 for this memorial that I really appreciate for that.
Senator Lim, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for bringing this issue before us. I think your persistence, your vision in creating this memorial is to be complimented by each and every one of us, and I think this is 287 of the proudest dollars any of us have spent in this committee. So
thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Any questions? Representative Burzan.
Mr. Chair, first I guess a statement and then a question. Senator Lim, I also appreciate you bringing this forward. My father fought in the Korean conflict, and from some of the stories he told me, it was quite an experience, good and bad, for all people. One thing in your presentation today gave me even more hope, and I was wondering if you knew something that we didn't know of. Since you'll be going to Korea next week, are we getting on a session before? Or?
Well, I hope the session ended yesterday. Since it might be dragged on, and I want to present our invitation to President as soon as possible. I should have gone the last week because of the fourth house needs to pass. Today I got a letter from the governor also inviting him to our state. So finally everything's, I'm ready to go as long as the South Korean government ready to, could arrange my meeting with the president. So hopefully I might be able to get $200,000 from the Hyundai Semiconductor in Korea also.
I hope you have safe travel.
Thank you very much.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senator Lim, what is the total cost to construct the memorial?
I think it's about $250,000 so far known. It could be more or less.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I realize that the $287 is considered symbolic, but there's something going on within me, and I'm just listening to my tummy right now, that says, why not $287,000? I'm just going to say that out loud because that's what my heart is telling me, and I realize that the memorial, they come in around $250,000. So if we wanted to scale down from there, why not $28,700? Is there something about that $287 that strikes me as less than?
Mr. Chair, if I respond, the $287 to me is $287 million. In value.
Mm-hmm.
Money amount is not the issue. The value with the dollar comes with it, to me, that counts a lot.
I appreciate you saying that.
And I had a similar thought, Senator, but the more I felt about mm-hmm. it, not thought, the more I felt about it, mm-hmm. There was a resonance and a symmetry and, mm-hmm. and a significant symbolism that $1, something of small monetary value, but immeasurably recognized and symbolic value, probably said more with less than a significant monetary contribution, meaningful monetary contribution. I think there's a grain of genius in the $287, $1 per Oregon serviceman.
But I had the similar thoughts.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I
conflict.
Senator
Tim. Senator Lim, I want to apologize first for the problem of getting the bill heard. I want you to know it was no way intentional. I have great respect for you. You were elected when I was Republican leader in the Oregon Senate. And I think what you've done here is wonderful. $287. And I apologize for not getting this done sooner. It was my mistake. The appropriation was on the bill since it's been amended, and I think we understand the problem with that. But it passed the Senate, and then it's been down here with the appropriation, but I think we understand that. And I look forward to work session and voting for this bill.
Sure. It'll be a privilege for all of us. And like Brian Grant says, no blood, no foul. So everything's okay. Representative Minnis.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am ready for a motion.
Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 1131 to the full committee UCAS recommendation.
Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none.
Senate Bill 1131 is moved to the full committee with a two-pass recommendation. And I believe Senator Lim would be honored if Senator Timms would carry this bill.
Thank you.
Love to do it.
On the House and in the on the floor. And what's the next leader?
Senator Lim could carry it, would carry it on the Senate floor.
Oh, and Senator Lim should carry it on the Senate floor.
Well, that's right. We've already been to the Senate floor. We're done since we get to the House floor.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Senator. Okay, we represent it. And we will conclude the work session on Senate Bill 1131 and move into the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2937. Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee.
Chair Westland, committee members, this bill also comes here from the House Judiciary Committee on Civil Law. This bill is sponsored by Representative Kavansky. The bill in its original form was modified.
Did you have a question? I said, oh. Please continue, sir.
Preparing an interpretation.
We have an hour and a half to get this out. Probably not enough time.
The for you also is the Dash 1 amendments that have been endorsed by the committee chair that sent this bill here. Federally. These amendments are in concert with what we did with the budget bill when it was before you. As you recall, we established a separate $50,000 expenditure limitation to support the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee. In recognition of that, what the law provided was the maximum amount that the Criminal Justice Commission could retain from asset forfeiture proceeds, and as such, that was the maximum amount they could expend. There has been fluctuations in the amount of revenue available to that account, and what this, the effect of the Dash 1 amendments before you is to do is to allow the commission to retain up to 115% of the expenditure authority. So in this case, the $50,000 expenditure authority would allow them to retain approximately $7,500 more than that so that they could have an ending balance or a beginning balance, if you will, next triennium. There has been some concern about whether the revenue for this was adequate to support it. It was legislative intent when they established that committee that it be fully 100% underfunded. So this will allow them the opportunity to do that. So the bill has that effect of lifting that ability to retain from $50,000 to approximately 15% above that. And then because we established a separate expenditure limitation in the budget bill, this bill also, consistent with that, would allow them to extend more than $50,000 if the costs associated with administering that are in excess of $50,000. And actually, in this budget, they were slightly above $50,000, about $53,000. So with this amendment, they would possibly be able to approach the emergency board to get funds above the $50,000 limit if necessary. Representative Kavansky may have more to add, and Phil Lemon is here also if you wish to hear from the commission on this bill.
Sure. In the public hearing, if anyone wants to testify on the bill, I don't think we got a sign-up sheet. You want to flesh this thing out a little bit, Representative?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is basically the ability to actually retain what we had set up during the last session, the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee, to have staff that can actually do the work that has not been done. This is a committee that was established, if I remember correctly, back in 1989, and it met for a couple of bienniums, and then it was gone up for about a four-year period, and there wasn't a lot of identification as to any potential issues that may be occurring, and without the staff being able to look at the paperwork that was coming in from the different agencies, it was very difficult to determine what, if anything, happened. I can report to the committee that the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee has been active since it was funded this last session. We've met, Bill can help me out, I think about eight times over about an eight-month period, nine-month period. And have actually revamped the forms that are used by Drug Forfeiture Council to expedite their work and also give us clearer data. The importance of this budget being funded is to make certain that the staff is still available to continue to receive the information and disseminate data to the committee members, and to determine, you know, what if any type of changes or modifications may be appropriate in the future. This was a, I'm going to call it a compromise based on other legislation that passed in 1997, specifically a bill called House Bill 2433 that expanded the ability for law enforcement to ask for consent to search vehicles. There is a component of that bill that requires a reporting back to the legislature, and it goes through this committee. So this committee does not only the work of the asset forfeiture review, it also receives information coming in as to the impact of this other legislation. And I guess one thing I did want to put on the record, since Senator Hannon made some comments regarding whether or not this had required a conviction for people to be subject to asset forfeiture. The state of Oregon does not have any criminal asset forfeiture statutes. Everything is then what's known as in rem civil proceedings against the property. And one of the concerns that was raised when the legislation was originally passed in 89 to make certain it was a check and balance as to how the program was proceeding, and the Asset Forfeiture Advisory Oversight Advisory Committee was that body to be making, I guess, gathering that information and sharing it back to the committee. Senator Gledley is also a member of that committee. Representative Patrick recently came on. My position is kind of in flux because we're kind of moving people in and out, and there's some discussions as to whether some appointments with the speakers in the process of making or actually have made will stand at this point, or if there will be a shift at the end of this calendar year. So if there's some other information that I might be able to help with, and we have Phil Lemon, who is here, who have oversight over the staff person that does the work for the committee, because I try to give that information.
Representative, when the law was created in 89, was it structured strictly for drugs?
Yes.
And this law has not changed. This bill would not change the intent of that, or it would cover all asset forfeiture.
My understanding, Mr. Chair, Senator Cannon, the way the law is structured today and the way it's been applied has been limited to drug conduct, the conduct involving controlled substances. We do have a bill that is moving through this process, which would open up a statewide asset forfeiture forfeiture statute for DUII. And that is, and I'll tell you my own, it's a situation that the current law allows for local entities to establish their own forfeiture laws outside of the drug substance areas. And some communities have done that for DUII, as well as for prostitution, I believe, where a vehicle is used. Multnomah County, I believe, has it. I'm not sure if Portland actually has their own, or if they work under Multnomah County, but Deschutes County also does, too. This new bill that is that's made it through the House side, it's now on the Senate side, would expand and set up the second statewide procedure for DUII forfeiture of vehicles. It does, in my opinion, unfortunately, retains or at this point allows for local communities to continue to have their own forfeiture laws in that same area. And my policy and my personal belief is that if you do something statewide, it should be uniformed.
What would happen if I were in a particular neighborhood and some police officer arrived and it turned out to be a drug scene, and under the asset forfeiture, my vehicles, my rental property that I own, were all confiscated, and it was found later that I did not have any involvement in this, would my assets be returned to me?
Senator, Mr. Chairman, Hannon, and most likelihood that would happen at some stage of the process.
But in some cases, it doesn't.
Well, there's a couple of steps that have to take place. You have to realize and what's going to pass your practice in this area in the district attorney's office, but the action is against the property. So you as an individual are not the defendant. You have to go through a certain procedure following what's known as a claim and a certain time frame to challenge the forfeiture or the seizure of the property before it's actually forfeited. And if you fail to do so or raise any defenses, and there is a defense that this body incorporated, I believe, in 1993, called the innocent owner defense, where an individual can demonstrate, if they're able to demonstrate to the court, that they or an innocent owner did not know the conduct that was going on, such as in rental property, that hopefully that would prevail and you would, in fact, not have that property taken. But it is an affirmative step that you as the individual claimant, the owner of the property, have a duty to go forward. If you fail to do anything in a timely manner, you could lose that right, at least from my perspective. Now, Representative Patrick may be able to give you a little bit more insight as to how that works, since I have not practiced that area in the district attorney's office.
Well, let me ask you another question, if I can, Mr. Chairman. What happens under RICO when it's supposedly claimed that I've been involved or my property has been involved with illegal activity, racketeering, and they come in and file the papers against the person renting the property from me? Can they confiscate the house or the building, the commercial building, under the RICO, and would it apply in the same instances of this?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hammond, RICO is a different set of laws from the asset forfeiture. What I will tell you is that under the asset forfeiture, some of the concerns that you've raised earlier on today are the standard operating procedure in a forfeiture action, that the state through the governmental entity will give notice of a seizure or possible taking of the property. Because if you're talking about personal property, it's handled really in one direction. If it's real property, there's another set that's done. But it is against the property. It can, in fact, be brought without any charges, criminal charges, not only being proven and you being convicted, ever being filed in an interim proceeding. Regarding the RICO, I'm just not that familiar with it, and I don't know if Ross is working on it.
Let me ask you this question. What happens if I have a loan with a bank, and bank XYZ lent me money to buy a rental piece of property, and my tenant in there is found to have a meth lab in there, and so when the police busted the place, they arrested the people, they confiscated all the property after a cleanup. Now, does the bank have first claim to that, or do I have first claim?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I would assume, depending on the perfection of their lien, they would probably, depending on the mortgage amount, would dictate what type of equity was in the house, and that they're going to stand in a senior position. But I don't know if it outright discounts your position. They have the ability to come in as a secure property holder or lien holder to raise basically the same type of defense that an innocent owner would have. In similarity.
Are there notices given to say the bank, or in case of the the innocent, what do you call it, the innocent owner, but Senator Hannon's the owner of the rental property and it's seized, and he has a clear title, does he get notified that this thing's been seized and forfeited?
There's notice provisions that are provided, both published notice as well as filing, if it's a piece of property in the records of the county records that are required by this statute. This
and just maybe so this bill specifically deals with the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee. The committee was set up, and it's my belief in looking at the records that I have to prevent any of the uses of the asset forfeiture system, and as a continuing review of that system. It has not done a lot over the years. Representative Krasanski chaired that committee. They did do quite a bit of work over the over this last biennium. I would disagree that it is necessary at this point in time, in fact, put in a bill to get rid of the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee. That bill did not make it out, but also I agreed to work in good faith during the interim to look at the criminal forfeiture pieces and the other pieces. That's why I'll support this amendment today, but I don't believe that this committee is necessary, but I've agreed to work in good faith to see what kind of results that they produce during the interim, what kind of testimony there is to look at the criminal forfeiture piece. Representative Krasanski has worked with that piece in changing the level of proof in the civil forfeiture action. But all this is doing, the budget that we approved in this committee for the Criminal Justice Commission was, I believe, $53,000. So Lemon is shaking his head. Their limitation is $50,000. This will allow them the $3,000 out of this account, which is being put up by cities and counties, to be able to do that. I'm still uncomfortable with the commission, but I gave my word to the chair of the House Judiciary Committee that I would act in good faith look at this over the interim, and I'm willing to do that. Hopefully some of those issues will be addressed in terms of Representative Daniel has some substantial problems with the way it's done, as does ACLU and some of the other people, but I think we need to work in good faith, and I think that we need to pass, I think we should pass this amendment to at least allow that piece to happen so we can look at it, because there hasn't been a lot of work done since 1989 to do this.
Can I ask one more question? I apologize for getting into submission mechanics rather than the budget amount, but I have a very strong interest in this, having had a constituent that went through some asset forfeiture and was never convicted of anything. But what would happen if I own a residential place that was rented to a tenant? Tenant was in there cooking drugs. And you put the asset forfeiture on that building. And then DEQ came along and said, but it's not habitable. You have to tear it down or physically remove it. Now who has first claim? Because the bank has lost the asset of the building, and the landowner was the unknown landlord who didn't know the activities. Who loses in that circumstance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, one, unless there could be proven a significant nexus between you being a landowner and the individual who was cooking the methamphetamine in your home. Typically, no forfeiture would be done on that type of building. Then it would be between the, and DEQ would then notify that the house was uninhabitable. There is a provision in the state law which allows, which requires 5% of the proceeds go towards a cleanup fund. If there is money available there, the innocent owner could could potentially apply for some of those cleanup funds. But otherwise, they could take a civil cause of action first against the renters, but typically that would never be seized. And in common practice, at least in Jackson County, I will tell you that unless there's a substantial piece of property that's worth a huge amount of money, if there's a meth lab on it, the agencies don't want to seize it and even try and forfeit it, because it's going to cost you more in cleanup.
Well, I had that situation with a person out in Lake City, if you recall. And it was a son or nephew or something else to the person that owned the property, wasn't aware of what they were doing and gave him a trailer or something to use, and it turned out to be a kitchen for a lab for drugs.
On the other hand, I would tell you that I profited from that case in the DA's office. It wasn't resolved by the time I left the
country. I mean, the guy didn't have a pot to pee in, the landowner.
But that land was not forfeited. There was no attempt to forfeit that gentleman's land.
And then Big Brother DEQ steps in and says, this is a contaminated area. This is an orphan site. We need to clean this up. See, that's what bothers me with these things. Once they start snowballing, how big does the snowball get before it bursts?
Did I hear a motion in that?
You want a motion?
I want a motion. we can talk about substantive issues with regard to asset forfeiture all day long. I mean,
yeah.
Here's me. We're talking about $3,000.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment identified as House Bill 2937 as one dated 4/29/99 to House Bill 2937.
Any discussion? Any objection? Okay. No objection? So moved.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2937 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a, I'll let somebody else give the recommendation. But I'll vote to get it out of committee, but
it'll be priority to vote. Can you flip a motion like that?
It's bipartisan. We're working together.
I hear issues the first part of it. It's the second part.
Okay, we have a motion to move House Bill 2937 as amended to the full committee review draft recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections?
I'll give Curtis the vote, but I might withhold my vote on the floor.
Let the record show Senator Hannon is an enthusiastic supporter. Reluctant enthusiastic supporter. Seeing no objections, House Bill 2937 as amended is moved to the full committee with a due-pass recommendation. Representative Kozanski.
Oh, sure. On the House side, that's all
right. You are absolutely privileged to carry this on the House side, and the full committee will have Senator Kim, as it happens, when you carry, and would you like to carry on the Senate side?
I'd be happy to do that.
Because I think this is your bill.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Any other discussion on this? I just wanted to make sure we got it before.
Mr. Chair, just a piece of information. Senators Q-Tub and Tarno also serve on the committee, Asset Forfeiture Oversight, as does Representative Wells. They are other folks people can talk to if they want additional background information or want to get a sense of how the committee's been operating.
I've got to tell you, I feel more comfortable with an oversight committee in a sensitive area like this than I do without.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about the money issues all day long, but I'm happy the oversight committee's there. It seems to sound like committee is meeting me, and we're not adjourned. I guess I can take a hint, and we will adjourn me.
Okay.